There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hey, what's happening, Rush Nation? Here we are, Thursday night before the Super Bowl. We are getting to the point now where after this show and after Sunday / Monday, there's no more football for 8 months. So take it all in, enjoy it as much as possible. I know I'm going to be, I'm sure there are many others that are going to be enjoying it as well. But Stocks is running a bit late. We hope he will come along in a bit, but don't worry, I'm not alone. You don't have to listen to me dribble on for the next hour. I have brought with me a phenomenal guest. If you've been listening to us at any point over the last 6-7 years, you will recognize this brilliant gentleman. He is the managing editor of Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, and he is an Aaron Rodgers, I guess, apologist. Is that a fair announcement or?
Well, I mean, I do think he is one of the best quarterbacks of all time, Murph. But as far as, you know, his personal beliefs and stuff, no, I'm not going to take any responsibility for that. So,
but it's Pat Fitzmaurice. Here he is. He's back again. It's good to have you. It's been too long. I'm so glad you're back. And you're here for a milestone, my friend. This is episode number 800 of the 5
Oh, wow.
Podcast. So
happy anniversary.
Thank you. I didn't really realize it was 800 until about an hour ago. So, but it was just getting me. I was like, wow, we're 800 shows. More evening, afternoon, Stacey, afternoon. Just doing the time difference in my head. So, yeah, but it's good to. How are you doing? How are things? How are things with you? What's been going on since you've last been on, really?
Doing well, Murph. Always great to catch up with you. Thank you very much for having me on. And just looking forward to the culmination of the 2023 NFL season. Big game ahead. And so, you know, we've always got a lot cooking at Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. Betting Pros were all over the betting aspects of the Super Bowl from every conceivable angle. And, you know, like maybe less to do on the Fantasy Pros side now that the regular season is over. You'd think that, but we're very much readying ourselves for the NFL draft already. Just had the Senior Bowl this week, as you know. So had three of our guys down in Mobile, Alabama for that. And, you know, like I've already got rookie rankings up. I've got my 24 draft rankings up. So there is no such thing as an off season, Murph. As you know, I have to ask though, Murph, I'm curious about this since the Super Bowl in Greenwich time is going to be what, after 11 p.m.?
Yeah.
Kick off. Like, so how do you play that? I mean, it's a big eating and drinking event here in the United States. You know, we don't need many excuses to overindulge in food and alcohol, but how do you play that over in England?
I'll be honest with you. It really depends on the game. So a lot of it depends on the game and the day job work schedule. So this year is going to be a bit of a damp squid for me. I'm actually going to go to bed and then I'm going to wake up and watch the game and turn off my notifications. And I'm going to wake up and watch the whole thing at about 4:30 a.m. So the game would have ended probably about an hour before. And then I'm going to watch it through then. I think if it was a slightly different outcome, I might have done it slightly differently. But, and there's no disrespect to the teams that are in it. But I find it slightly harder to justify taking a day's annual leave for 49ers Chiefs, which we've seen this before. But I mean, I've done it different ways. The pandemic was the worst because I watched Tampa win a Super Bowl in the pandemic, and we did it. I did it literally watching the game in my front room on my own. And that was, it was great because there was no sweat on the game, but at the same point was quite miserable. What I do have as a family tradition, though, I rope my my sister-in-law, brother-in-law, and their kids. They're now 17 and 15, my niece and nephew. So I rope them around, and we do, and they're not into football, but I rope them into it. I've got tons of Tampa jerseys, so everyone wears a jersey, and we do a barbecue, and we get all the food out, and we kind of do, as you would do it before the game, we do it miles before the game, and I'm doing it with a bunch of people that have no skin in the outcome. They just like the food. But it's my way of doing it. But I've done it in the past where we've got some of the communities together, and we've gone to a bar in London, and we've gone and watched it. I've stayed over. I've caught the first train back home and then slept in my own bed and gone to bed because it finishes around about 3:30, 4 o'clock. Then the first train off the base is at 5. So if you can just sort of stay around long enough, it's not too bad. And then you don't have to pay for the hotel room. You get the first train home and sleep in your home. So, I know lots of people do it a lot of different ways here in the UK. Most people will stay up and do a gathering. Most people go to a bar if they can, if there's one near them that are showing the game. But I know those people that just watch it quietly. And I think a lot of it depends. I think if you get a Lions, if you get a really popular team in there, I think you'll see different ways that people celebrate. I think the feeling across the community that I'm in is kind of seen this one before. I think it's a bit quieter than it would be most years here.
Yeah. Sensible approach you're taking though, Murph, to get a good night's sleep and then wake up early and, you know, catch it with your coffee and breakfast.
That's it. And it's not a bad way. That's how I do Sunday night football in the regular season. And even if the Bucks play most of the time, not all the time, if it's a big game, I'll try and stay up and wangle the work schedule. But that's how I tend to do Sunday night football. It starts about 1:25 here. So, I'll go to bed and then I'll wake up and just watch it then. And it's a nice way of doing it because I can flip through the rubbish and get the whole game and I kind of get the best of both worlds that way. So, yeah, it's not bad. What about you? What do you have a Super Bowl tradition with the family, Pat?
I really don't. I mean, it all depends. You know, sometimes I've gone and met my dad to watch the Super Bowl with him and some friends. He used to have a friend who had an annual party. Then my son got a little older into the NFL, so I would stay home and watch with my son. Now my son is going to be off at a friend's house watching the game with like he's high school age. So they have a get together. They have like a friend's party and my wife and daughter are going to be out of town. So I think it's actually just going to be me and the dog watching the game alone. But that's perfectly fine with me. I'll be very content. No one to interrupt my enjoyment of the game. So I'm sure I'll find something good to eat and there's going to be plenty of beer, no doubt. So it'll be a good time.
I ask this question of everybody, right? So I'm one of these people that as a supporter of an NFC team like you are, I tend to not want the NFC team to win unless it's my team. Are you of a similar ilk or because they're not a divisional rival, you're less bothered and actually you'd be quite happy with a San Francisco 49ers win?
Well, it's interesting, Murph. So I have a bit of a bias toward the Chiefs because my dad used to live in Kansas City.
Okay.
And I'm very fond of Kansas City. Love that town. It's a jewel, an American jewel. So I've always had a soft spot for the Chiefs. But at the same time, I'm betting on the 49ers this year. So my money will be rooting for the NFC team this time around. But generally, I'm not a fan of the Niners. Like they're one of my they don't quite come up to the level of the Minnesota Vikings as far as teams I hate, but not a team I'm typically very fond of. So considering that I'm putting some money down on them, I'll probably be pretty neutral in how I watch this game. I've got conflicting interests, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm similar in the sense of the 49ers do have John Lynch. He's one of my all-time favorite players as their GM. And it'd be nice to see him win one. On the same token, they're the 49ers. I don't really like NFC teams winning it when it's not
exactly.
When it's not the Bucks. So actually, I'd be all right with it. So I'm kind of like you. I'm conflicted, but I don't really, you know, no one wants to see a dynasty unless it's your own team. So it is a conflicting, but I probably will be over here. It's amazing. The sentiment towards the Chiefs now, straw poll, is quite negative. Because there's the whole Mahomes and his brother and his wife and the antics that go with that. We got the Taylor Swift thing. I'm not going to get into a whole Taylor Swift thing, but you know, it doesn't play brilliantly in this country to absolutely everybody. I'm sure it doesn't in the US either. And then it's the fact they're 4 Super Bowls in the last 5 years, could be winning their third ring. It's a bit boring. It's a bit samey. So I think the general feeling, and the other thing that goes against them here in public opinion, is the UK really has 2 traditional teams that it roots for, like going way, way back to the 1980s. And it's the Miami Dolphins and the San Francisco 49ers. And there is a subtlety of Washington Commanders fans. And that's because they were the only teams that were ever played on television here. So a lot of fans who grew up watching NFL in the 1980s will support the 49ers or the Dolphins, and then subsequently their children if it passes down through the generations. So there's a strong 49er contingent here in this country. So, and I don't think there is as much one for the Chiefs. So it'd be interesting to see how it breaks down. I'm going to ask you, because you do work for Betting Pros, and I noticed that you did publish an article a few days ago about props for the Super Bowl, and I know a lot of our listeners will be doing some gambling on this. So do you have any props that you've got an eye on that you think could be good value for our listeners to make a little bit on a game and make it interesting?
My favorite is probably Christian McCaffrey over, and at last check it was 128.5 rushing and receiving yards combined.
Okay.
Not just rushing, but like, I think you could make a case for him having a big day rushing with the Chiefs. Their run defense isn't great. They rank 27th in DVOA, which is a pretty good metric against the run. And McCaffrey, I think, has cleared 90 rushing yards in like 7 of his last 8 games. And the only miss was in week 17 against Washington when he tweaked his calf and was taken out early. He's also averaged like 8 targets a game. 7.4 targets a game and almost 40 receiving yards over his last 5 games. So I think it makes sense that the 49ers don't want this to turn into a quarterback duel between Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy, because they're outgunned in that area. So I think it behooves them to get the ball into the hands of Christian McCaffrey as much as possible. I actually bet the under on Patrick Mahomes' passing yardage, which was at last check somewhere around 260.5 yards. It just seemed, well, I mean, he's been dealing with this shortage of wide receiver firepower all year, and he's thrown for under 260 yards in 4 of his last 5 games. I think the 49ers are maybe going to put some heat on him with their pass rush. Let's see what else. I've got Isaiah Pacheco over 65.5 rushing yards, because I think the Chiefs are going to want to be balanced offensively, and it's maybe a little easier to run on the 49ers than it is to throw on them. Aaron Jones had success against them in the 2 weeks ago. The Lions running back combination teamed up for like 138 rushing yards. And then I have Deebo Samuel under 58.5 receiving yards. Kansas City has allowed the 4th fewest receiving yards to wide receivers. They have 3 really good cornerbacks, L'Jarius Sneed, Trent McDuffie, Joshua Williams. They've all given up under a yard per route run into their coverage. And Debo has failed to top that number in five of his last six games. I also have a fun one, Murph. I've got, I think, Brandon Ayuk to have a reception of 50 yards or longer, and it pays 7-1 odds. Ooh. On that. And there's actually some reasoning behind that one. The blitz, the Chiefs blitz at a very high rate, one of the highest rates in the league. And strangely, like, Brock Purdy has been maybe the best quarterback in the league against the blitz this season. Like, his passer rating and other numbers have gone way up, and his most frequently targeted wide receiver when teams blitz him is Brandon Ayuk, and normally at a pretty deep target depth. So, like, I think there might be a big play in there for Brandon Ayuk this Sunday. We'll see about that. If it happens, I'll be pretty happy at those odds.
Yeah, I like that. You've kind of seen the game very similar to how I've seen it. I think you're not going to beat the Chiefs on the perimeter. You're not going to beat them too much with the deep ball. But like you say, maybe the odd play that you've mentioned kind of makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of this game is going to be played through the middle effectively, not just with the run, but I think you're going to see both tight ends get a lot of action in this game. I think you're going to see lots of incremental games, maybe instead of those really big splashy plays. And I think it's going to be who executes that game plan across the middle. And I think it really, this game comes down to who's going to be the most penetrative in the red zone. Who is actually going to, when they get down there, be the most efficient. And I think that's where this game gets decided. It gets decided in the red zone because both these teams can move the ball. Both these teams have got weapons. I think it is just purely a case of, I think it's going to go a lot sort of, you know, in between the numbers. I think it's going to stay pretty much in the middle of the field. And I think it's just about who executes better in the big moments. And I think it'll be a close game. I don't think that you're going to see a blowout. I think it's going to be a one-score game, and it's about who handles it the best. And the 49ers in this situation 4 years ago were in a great position, and they didn't manage the game well. Probably the worst fourth quarter game management sequences I've seen. They just got really pessimistic. They went away from what was giving them a lot of success against the Chiefs, and they played into the Chiefs' hands, and the Chiefs went and got them. So it'll be interesting this time round to see if the same happens. We have been joined by Stocks. Stocks, hello.
Hey, apologies for my tardiness. Pat, how are you, my man?
Doing great, Stocks. Excellent that you could make it. You know, even though you're wearing a Broncos hat, the Packers have played in five Super Bowls in their history. They're 4-1. The one loss was to the Broncos, and of course, that was the one Super Bowl I've attended in person. So I'll try not to take offense.
I can only apologize on behalf of the Broncos for that performance, Pat.
We were talking about last week, Pat, that the Broncos may be selling the naming rights to part of their stadium. It was a long-winded joke, but maybe we can get Fantasy Pros involved and we can have the Fantasy Pros East Stand.
That would be wonderful. I would take that. I might even have to cheer for the Broncos if that happened.
Pat's just gone through Super Bowl props. There's some really good ones in there. I do like the Brandon Ayuk one. I think that's unusual. I think if you can find it here in Betmakers, then definitely get on that. There were a couple of bits of news just away from the Super Bowl. One was to see CJ Stroud win Rookie of the Season. I don't think that's a big shock or surprise. Initial thoughts, gentlemen?
Wonderful.
Go ahead, Pat. No, go on. I think you're going to say everything I was going to say, so you might as well fire it out.
Yeah, wonderful choice. Fantastic season, and I think what was most impressive on his season looking back was when the Texans opened the year in September, they had, I believe, four of their five starting offensive linemen injured, and Stroud nevertheless went out and threw for 300 or more yards, I think, in three of his first four games. Like, I thought he was going to get killed in his first month with the decimated offensive line, and it didn't bother him at all, and he just hit the ground running from day one and was fantastic. So
he didn't turn the ball over either in those games,
right? No,
151
zero attempts. Interceptions in those first four games.
Yeah, so incredible.
Yeah, and lowest interception rate of any quarterback this year.
Yeah, so well deserved. I think the Texans did a phenomenal job just to let him play and let him do what he wanted to do to get comfortable. And I think that permeated through the rest of the team. So a phenomenal job for him and well-deserved. We'll see the rest of the awards come out in the next couple of days. I don't think you're going to be shocked by too many of them, but I think that one was definitely more than justified and you won't see too much backlash. The other bit of news, this was interesting, this broke overnight, was Baker Mayfield was on the Kay Adams show, and after they finished recording, they left the microphones on. And so there is a discussion between Steve Young, former Buccaneers quarterback, for those who don't know. He was drafted by the Buccaneers before he became a 49ers legend. And he is talking to Baker, and he's like, you know, heck of a job this year. And Baker seems to confirm that he is coming back to Tampa, and he's going to be making a career. This also leads with the Buccaneers announcing their new offensive coordinator, who is Baker's former offensive coordinator at the Rams. And the Buccaneers chose to release a video of the two of them catching up and on the offensive coordinator's first day, which is very unusual for that kind of media to come out about a quarterback who's no longer under contract with the franchise. So everything points towards Baker coming back. Do we think this is a good move for the Bucs and for Baker based on what we've seen, or do we think we've kind of seen the high water mark with Baker and everything's going to come back crashing down to earth next year?
I think we talked about it either last week or the week before, Murph, and how you thought Baker would be coming back after initially earlier in the season thinking that you'd be going QB early on, and how the Buccaneers have sort of not solved the Baker equation, but certainly made it look a lot less difficult as a quarterback on a team. I mean, we've seen Baker capitulate in several places, and all of a sudden he's a bit more mature, seems to be leading the team, and this is all stuff you alluded to, and it just seems to be continuing in that motion where it looks as if Tampa have got their guy after having Tom Brady for a few years, but with Baker being comfortable in that, and now they've brought in the OC, it's all the pieces of the puzzle without officially putting them together, if that makes sense. So yeah, you mentioned it earlier a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's all systems go.
Yeah, I agree. I think you can win with Baker Mayfield, and the Buccaneers did. They made the playoffs and almost beat the Lions, almost found themselves facing the 49ers. So I think it's a good move because they're not really in a position to get a top quarterback in the draft this year and would have to pay a steep price to move up to do so. They have other needs they can address if they don't pick a quarterback in the first round. There are other shots that they can take at quarterback if they want to later in the draft. I don't think free agency or a trade for a veteran would have been a solution. I mean, Justin Fields, he's going to require something in a trade, and you would have to pay him a lot of money because he's whatever deal involves Justin Fields is automatically going to involve a contract extension. And why acquire someone like Russell Wilson when Baker Mayfield played better than Russell Wilson this past season? So, like, I think it's a sensible move for them. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they spent day two or day three pick on a lesser regarded quarterback prospect, maybe Spencer Rattler or Michael Pratt, someone like that. It seems to make a lot of sense for the Buccaneers to bring him back.
Yeah, I thought that. I agree everything you're saying. I'd like to see the contract. I'm fine with a 3-year deal, similar to a Geno Smith kind of deal that was done, that's heavily incentivized, that gives the Buccaneers some protection if things don't pan out. It is a new offensive coordinator. It could be without Mike Evans. We don't know. So, you know, you start changing things a little bit, how the things react. So I'd like the Buccaneers to get a little bit ahead of this with the contract and have an ability to get out of it after 1 or 2 years without too much of a penalty. So, and a lot of his contract this year was heavily incentivized. And for Baker Mayfield, that seemed to work. You know, he hit almost every one of his incentives. So I think if you can get him on a decent base, it's a big uplift on what he was on, but with some really nice incentives where he can earn some top 5, top 7 in the league money if he hits those incentives, that's a win-win situation, because if he hits them, the Buccaneers are winning. And if he doesn't hit them, then you've kind of saved yourself a load of money. So I think it'd be an interesting move. Happy to see it. I didn't think I'd say that 12 months ago because I was quite livid. I was beyond livid when we signed him. But, you know, I've made my Baker Mayfield apology. I'm on board. So it's all good. Although I did buy a jersey of a punter instead of a Mayfield jersey. And that is a bone of contention for some people. I just love Jake Kamada. What can I say? Let's talk about the real reason why Pat's here. The Pat is an expert in running backs. There's very few guys I trust better than Pat on this subject. And we're going to do a series. We talked about it the last couple of weeks about looking at 2023, starting to dissect it from a fantasy perspective before we get into all the rookies and before we start looking forward. And everyone likes to look forward and then don't do the retrospective. And in my line of work in the day job, you do the retrospective. When you win or lose, you have to break it down. You have to see what was good, what was bad, what can we learn from. And the retrospective is really important. So we're doing it now. It's fresh in our minds. We're going to cover running backs. And for me, and I don't know about you two, I'm going to open this up for a general discussion before we get into this. I feel like we're at a crossroads of the position in fantasy football. And I feel like it's either going to go heavy towards where we were 5-6 years ago, and we'll see the emergence of talented backs and position scarcity driving players up the board, or we're going to see what we did 15 years ago, where running back was almost an afterthought in the draft because they're unreliable, not really big fantasy producers, barring a couple of players, and then you end up basically either taking a hit on the Damian Tomlinson, Priest Holmes, or in this case, CMC, maybe Jonathan Taylor. But effectively, and then you fade the position and then you just pick him up late in hope. So I open the floor to you. What are your thoughts on the running back position? Because I find out of all the skill positions, it's the most interesting to dissect, because I think if you get this strategy right, you'll end up winning a lot of leagues or getting far in your playoffs. If you get it wrong, I think you get burned quite easily.
So I think I tend toward the latter scenario that you painted, Murph. I think we are always going to see in any NFL season running backs who come out of obscurity to be major contributors. And I think like Kyren Williams was the perfect example of someone this year who won people leagues and was, you know, undrafted in a lot of fantasy leagues, or a very late round draft pick. And that sort of guides my annual strategy and running backs, because wide receiver is the more predictable position. I would rather invest my early round capital in more predictable assets than in volatile assets. And running backs tend to be more volatile assets. So I tend to load up on wide receivers in the earlier rounds and take shots at running backs later. Now, that's not to say the early round draft strategy is always a bad idea, because the people who drafted Christian McCaffrey with the top three pick this year did quite well for the most part. A lot of championship rosters had Christian McCaffrey on them. So, but I do think it pays to give yourself a chance to get lucky and find those running backs who inevitably come out of the fog every year to, become difference makers. And we saw a lot of pretty guys who were pretty cheap in drafts this year have major impacts. Not just Kyren Williams, but Rashad White was very affordable going outside the top 25. Alvin Kamara, who was dealing with the suspension, and that drove down his value. Devon Achan, who was a later pick and had some really impactful games. So I think it's always going to be like that, and taking some shots on later round guys is always going to make sense. And I do think it makes more sense to invest early in wide receivers and, you know, maybe anchor with that. I like the hero RB strategy, and I do think there are about, you know, 8 or 9 running backs worthy of going in the first 2 rounds. And that's usually the case. I looked at last year's ADPs, and it was about 11 running backs in the top 30. And I think this year it's going to be about 11 running backs in the top 30. Some of the names have changed, but my overall approach hasn't necessarily changed. I kind of think it's going to be the same, but maybe with a just slightly different cast of characters.
I think that's interesting. I agree. And I always get to this point, where we get to April and May, and you do the best ball drafts, and you're starting to see early ADP, and you see this, and this has been true the last 2 years, especially with the amount of injuries at the position, where you see running backs faded. And then you get to June, July, and then especially August, where you get the casual players. That was the word I was looking for. I don't want to say amateur because that's not fair. Casual players who play in a handful of leagues or just one. And you watch the ADP of those running backs shoot all the way up. So you'll get players that you were getting in the fourth round in June. You're paying a second round pick if you want them in August. And that seems to have been the trend the last couple of years. I think Derrick Henry was one of those players who was very, very cheap. And I mean, he delivered where his ADP kind of was. But you were getting him in the fourth round early summer, and you were paying a high second for him on almost name recognition come the end of the season or end of draft season. So I think you're right. But I guess it's just that, is there eight worthy? And I guess we'll go through all the different segments, and I'm keen to get Stock's opinion on this. I don't know if there is eight worthy players in the second round anymore, or better in the running back position. I mean, it would depend on the rookies and their landing spots and the draft capital spent, although I don't think this is an amazing running back class from early look. I think there's some good players, but I'm not seeing a top two round talent, or even top three round, if I'm honest. It would have to depend on draft capital, opportunity in camp. Maybe there's an injury to someone and they shoot to the top of the chart and there's no one behind them. And that opinion might change. But right now, I don't see a top three. I don't even think I see a rookie running back in the top 50 overall ADP in redraft. This year.
Agreed.
You are right, and I'm not disagreeing, but we are talking about fantasy football, and we are talking about a rookie running back that is going to be the number one running back in the class, and it doesn't matter when you go back and look. At some point, there will be hype for that number one running back, and they will get thrust either into the early second or late first because they are the new shiny toy, and people want to get that end of round one value. There's nobody in this class that is that good. And there is nobody in the class that should be in round one contention, but there is that new running back shine. And as soon as Twitter gets hold of it, it's over. And it's easy for me to sit here and say that. And who knows, we might get, who's going to come out this year that could prove that wrong at the land in exactly the right spot. The fact I can't even think of it off the top of my head is a concern, not a concern, but it proves the point that you're making, Murph. But I don't want to sit here and say that there isn't going to happen, because the whole hype train thing scares me in fantasy football at the minute. And we saw it this year with Bijan, and then you get players like Joe Mixon where the complete opposite happens. We draft him really late as a bit of an afterthought, and he's what, a top five running back this year? So, yeah. I don't think there is, but I think that definitely round two, somebody will sneak in, and it will be like Jahmyr Gibbs this year. We were a bit too high on him, right? And I say we, the community was a bit high on Gibbs. And yes, he had a good season, but did he surpass his ADP? I don't know off the top of my head. Was he, it was what, round two at his most expensive?
Yeah, he's an interesting one, because the players that took him, because he did so well at the end of the season. So I've broken into categories, and I've put in the, where did I put him? I taunted between putting him in like the outlier. I put him in the drafted high, did okay. But actually, if you persisted with Jahmyr Gibbs, he probably won you or got you in contention in the playoffs, because his end of season scoring was highly impressive. He was so off the pace at the start, but David Montgomery got a lot of the ball. There were some injuries. He never got, it took him a long time to get going. But when he got going, he was an RB1 last 6 weeks of the season, 8 weeks of the season. So he's a hard one to call, that if you took him that high and you persevered, if you weren't out of contention, he probably thrusted you back into contention at the tail end and probably justified his price. But over the whole body of work for the season, he wouldn't have done, because he killed you those first 8 weeks of the season where he didn't, he virtually got you any points. And that's the sort of context that kind of needs to be paid. Because I think if a Jamar Gibbs owner was listening to this, I'd be like, well, I think he did great. And he did, because your recency bias is last half of the season, he was phenomenal.
But if you, but you look at the first 7 weeks he had, yeah. A terrible few weeks. Then he got injured, and you're thinking, this isn't it. If how many people dropped him in those first 7 weeks?
Yeah, and that's, if you did that, you'd really take your hair out. You probably got him on the do not draft list this year. But yeah, yeah. But just, yeah, it's definitely a fair point. And I think this is why I love the running back discussion, because I think Pat's right. There isn't a correct way to do this. I think there's a way to be more optimal to give yourself a better chance of success. Because if you remember, sort of 4 or 5 years ago, I advocated for position scarcity. You had to take a running back early because the quality.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality outside of the top 8-9 players, the drop-off was so significant. Then you needed to take one of those players to hold any kind of, not even advantage, just to kind of tread water. If you didn't get those players, you were really struggling with your build to make the points up elsewhere, because wide receivers were quite predictable. And outside the top 24, it then really plateaued. And then unless you got a really significant QB, you were struggling with your build. But now with all these injuries that are coming in, players in the top eight, I mean, I've broken this down. So the only players I'd say that you took at the top of the board that performed as a player that you took in the top 8-10 of the position, the only three I've got, Christian McCaffrey, of course, he absolutely obliterated the position. So if you took him, you were, as Pat said, you were in good stuff. The only two players that that returned ADP for me that were taking the top two rounds were Travis Etienne, who was actually around three picks. So for me, easily justified his ADP, and Breece Hall, who was taken at the end of the second round. They were the only players for me that I think justified, and Breece Hall, you had to deal with the injury. But when he played on points per game, phenomenal. He was a really good piece for you. So I think it's harder now because your bust rate is over 50% of those players that were drafted in the top two rounds, top three rounds. Because so many of them, like if we flip the conversation, the players that were drafted high did okay. So maybe you could scrape some sentiment of value. Was Derrick Henry, Bijan, who I'm not even going to say really did value, but he wasn't a complete bust. Gibbs, we've talked about. Saquon, who was the RB12, but really didn't look anything like the RB12. But you were drafting him as the RB3 or 4 or 5. And Tony Pollard, who at the end of the season, absolutely bombed. So he did okay through the body work, but he was the reverse Gibbs. In he started so well that he put you in a really great position from a team perspective. But if you had him going into the playoffs, he killed you. He just didn't put up any noteworthy games tail end of the season. So, and they were the ones that did okay. And then you look at the ones that were drafted high and busted. You got, I put Najee Harris. He was kind of on the cusp of the third, fourth round. DeAndre Swift, Austin Eckler completely killed you. Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, mostly due to injuries, and Ramadri Stevenson. So if you look at the bust rate of those players, it's over 50%. So there is a lot more, as Pat goes at the start, volatility going high. It's a risky one because if you hit it, you're in great spot. You're going to be building a strong championship roster. But if you miss, to come back from that's hard. But then you won't be the only one coming back from it.
I think you could even make a case, Murph, that there were a couple of guys I think you counted as successes. Breece Hall, Travis Etienne, who Etienne, his productivity really fell off down the stretch significantly. Absolutely. He was fantastic in the first half of the season, not so fantastic down the stretch. And then Breece Hall, who took a while to get going. At first, they were managing his workload pretty vigilantly. And for a while, even after they said they weren't going to manage his workload as carefully, he just wasn't doing anything on the ground, mainly because his offensive line was terrible and, you know, no one was respecting the Jets quarterbacks. So now I do like Breece Hall a lot for 2024 and think, you know, what we saw at the end of the season is more of the Breece Hall we're going to get going forward. But yeah, the bust rate in the earlier rounds with running backs last year was pretty high. It was, you know, if you didn't get McCaffrey, it was hard to find other guys who gave you a satisfying return on investment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the case. And I think it's hard. In previous years, we've always seen this group of 6-7 players that have been drafted high that have kind of hovered around. And the last 2 years, because of the amount of injuries, that's not been the case. You've had one or two separators at the position at the top of the board, and then everyone else has kind of been in this sort of pack. And then that's where that late round play comes in. Here's my question would be, we're focusing a lot on redraft. In a big tournament, Charity League, Scott Fish Bowl, Warrior Bowl, FFCC, Best Ball, or redraft leagues, where it's a big competition and you're talking 200 teams upwards. In the Scott Fish Bowl, it's going to be, what, nearly 4,000 people this year? So do you throw that caution out the window and gamble because of the fact of the risk is you can't play safe in a tournament like that? You're going to struggle to play safe in a tournament, and you almost have to get everything right to have a chance of winning. Or do you just go, it's just too much of a risk, I'd rather enjoy my tournament, try and pull along, get as far as I can and see what happens?
I tend to go fade running backs early on in those leagues. And if okay. I do, maybe a hero RB build. Last year in the Scott Fish Bowl, I took Bijan Robinson fairly early and then laid back at running back, but you know, still did okay because I took Devon Achane and I forget who else I came out with, but came out all right, like made the playoffs, didn't have any sort of deep run or anything. But yeah, so you can take the early round running back approach. Just because it wasn't particularly successful in 2023 doesn't mean that will be so for 2024. But like I do think we're going to continue to see those late round surprises. There will be rookies and probably multiple rookies who run for 1,000 yards, even though right now there is no consensus whatsoever about who the top rookie running back is. It could be any of like a half dozen guys. Like I think there is, if you ran a poll with the top six names, I don't know if anyone would poll at more than 25%.
Yeah.
So, but there will be successful rookie running backs. It's inevitable. We know it. It's just hard to identify them right now. So I guess that's what we're going to be spending our spring and summer doing.
I'm on Team Bucky Irving, so
very explosive.
I just think he could be fun. So, but yeah, I completely agree with you. We have another question, and it kind of pivots away from what we're talking about, but it's still really pertinent here. Thoughts on Javonta Williams in 2024 and Jaleel McLaughlin?
I suspect I'm going to have Javonte Williams on some teams because it seems like the market is going to be a little bearish on him for 2024 after he disappointed in 2023, but he's going to be further removed from ACL surgery, and that's a big thing. Like, we saw Breece Hall take some time to go back to being Breece Hall. And maybe we thought that sort of outburst was coming from Javonte at some point this season, even if it was late in the year. Didn't really happen, but based on what we saw from him early in his career and how explosive he could be and how difficult he was to tackle, I still think that player is in there somewhere, and maybe we'll see it next year once the knee should be completely fine, no ill effects whatsoever. McLaughlin's interesting, good sleep, like an explosive player, but he did sort of cede work to, why am I drawing a blank? Samaje Perine later in the year. It was kind of strange. I thought maybe they were going to use him as their primary pass catching back, but Samaje Perine sort of elbowed him out of that job in Denver. So I'm not quite sure what to make of McLaughlin, an interesting late round flyer for sure. But I don't know if he'll be one of my favorite late round flyers.
We've got no idea what the offense looks like in Denver at the moment. So it's really difficult to, I agree with what you say about the player in Javonte Pat, but if Russell's not there, which at this point, I've got no idea what's going on. And there could be so much more else that happens with trades or players not being there. It could be Javonte and Courtland Sutton and that's it. There's wide receivers on the roster that might not be there. Tim Patrick might come back and get injured again and he won't play. And I shouldn't make a joke at somebody's injury expense. But at this point, the Tim Patrick experience is over for me, sadly. And yeah, I just think at this point in the season, before the current season has finished, it's really difficult for me to comment on next year. But yeah, as a player, I love Javonte and what he can do.
I'm out on Javonte Williams, pure and simple. His price will have to be very low. I just don't trust Sean Payton. I don't trust Sean. No. And look, it's an easy thing to say. When was the last time Sean Payton produced a 1,000-yard rusher? I don't think Kamara got there. I know he got there on scrimmage yards, but I don't think Kamara had 1,000-yard rushing at any point. So I can't remember the last time. Mark Ingram, maybe?
Yeah. When was Sean Payton head coach of the Saints?
He was about 10 years. I think Mark Ingram, 6 years ago, maybe?
The thing is, I think it's great to have a Sean. Like, Sean Payton has produced a lot of fantasy value for running backs, but it's usually been multiple running backs is the issue.
And that's why I'm out. Is it's not a talent issue. Javonte Williams is still young. He's going to be 24. I haven't got a problem with the age profile. He's still got a lot of tread on the tires. It's not a skill ability. For me, that is a team that is very much in flight. It needs to be rebuilt. They ran the ball really poorly at times last year. I mean, Javonte Williams averaged 3.6 yards a carry. And that's not entirely his fault. And I think, as you say, I think right now the way that I see that offense going is it will be built on the ground. His receiving set is okay. It's not brilliant. I think you're going to see a rotation of backs there. I think you're going to see three backs. I think two of them will be fantasy relevant. But I don't see a high ceiling for Javonte Williams. I think if you're drafting him in the, if I had to draw a pin where I think he's going to go seventh, eighth round, I think his best outcome is he delivers at ADP. I don't see a ceiling play. So if I'm going to pick a running back in the seventh or eighth round, I want the Rashad Whites, the Brian Robinson Juniors, the path to a ceiling. And that's why I just can't get involved in Javonte Williams. It's not a slight on the player. It's, I don't see the ceiling. In the range that he's going in, you're going to have players that will probably finish below him, but have that opportunity, if things break right, to finish higher than him. If you call a situation right, like we spoke quite a lot on the Washington Commanders, and we were very in on Brian Robinson Jr. We saw a clear pathway for him being the lead back and him having a big opportunity. And if you call those situations right, they're the players I'm more invested in that sort of range. And obviously, it depends where you go. If Javante Williams falls into double-digit rounds, I'll have a squid. I'll have a play on it. But I don't think he does, because I think he's got too much love. I think he is a player. He's a hype player that people are interested in. So
interesting. Sorry, Murph. I've just been looking up New Orleans running backs. Interesting fact: Kamara has never been over 1,000 yards rushing.
No, that's what I mean. I never thought he'd been over 1,000 yards rushing. That's why I think Mark Ingram was the last.
Yeah, he had back-to-back seasons in 16-17, and he just squeaked over.
Yeah. So I remember 16. I didn't know 17. But okay. But that's the 7 years. And I just don't see it. That's the scheme that he runs. I don't see the ceiling for Javante Williams. If he was going to get, 80 targets a season, I'll change my opinion, but I don't see it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, he does. I like that Javante Williams can catch passes, but you're right. Like, we have seen running backs be valuable in Sean Payton's offense, but it's just usually a split, and it's multiple guys being fantasy relevant in his thing. He's kind of, Payton is sort of the anti Sean McVay, who likes to put it all on one player, which we've seen from players ranging from Todd Gurley to Daryl Henderson for a while. And, now Kyren Williams, who, again, a lightly regarded NFL prospect who wound up immensely valuable in fantasy football this past year.
Absolutely. And likely to do the same again this year. So, yeah, that's kind of where we are. I want to talk about, there's a group of players that I do want to talk around. I think it is an interesting group to talk about. And this is the players that were drafted fairly highly last year, but busted at a significant rate for all different reasons why they busted, right? So Najee Harris, DeAndre Swift, Austin Eckler, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, and Ramadre Stevenson. Is there anyone there you like want to dig into and think what their outcome's going to be for next year in terms of up or down? Are there players on that list you think, I don't want to touch them, a barge pole, the players that you think actually for the right price I'll get involved in? Or is there any players you think there that might be high regardless of how bad it was this season for them?
Six players were on that list, Murph. I've actually got four of those six in my top 20. And okay. Najee is at RB27, so he's not far off. Eckler is really the only one I just want no piece of anymore. I can make a sales pitch for Jonathan Taylor pretty easily. I mean, this is a guy who did lead the NFL in rushing a few seasons ago, and it was pretty productive on a per-game basis this past year. Obviously, like, the offseason was traumatic with his sort of mutual animosity with the team for a while, and then he opens the season on IR. But I'm excited to see what that could look like next year with Anthony Richardson at quarterback doing read option things with Jonathan Taylor. Because when you run read option stuff, like, linebackers have to freeze a split second, because when Anthony Richardson puts it in Jonathan Taylor's breadbasket, you don't know if he's actually handing off or if he's going to pull it out and run himself. So we saw that sort of dynamic spike the value of Alfred Morris in Robert Griffin III's rookie season. Like, Alfred Morris, I don't think anyone regards as a very talented running back. I think Alfred Morris had like almost 1,800 rushing yards and averaged over 5 yards per carry that season, and scored a bushel full of touchdowns. I think Taylor could be immensely valuable next year. Like, I think I've got him at running back 6, and I could make a case for putting him ahead of Kyren Williams even.
Yeah.
Next season.
I'm with you. I'm 100% there with you, because the secret sauce there is Shane Steichen. I think for me, Shane Steichen is a very, very talented like, was a very talented offensive coordinator. He had a very good season as head coach. I for everything he had to deal with, to get the Colts into the position where they were playoff viable 2 weeks to go, I think is phenomenal. With all the Jonathan Taylor thing and all that news, losing your quarterback, you're playing Gardner Minshew. He's not a bad quarterback, don't get me wrong, but the guy's a sixth-round pick for a reason. And all the multiple injuries, injuries on the offensive line, and to manage all of that to where they got to, I think I'm right there with you with Jonathan Taylor. And then the biggest case study to Shane Steichen is a name on this list. It's DeAndre Swift. He turned DeAndre Swift into a very significant fantasy weapon. But it just hit the best seasons of DeAndre Swift's career came under the coaching of Shane Steichen. And we saw DeAndre Swift heavily regress under Brian Johnson this year. And yeah, there was some health issues and the offense stagnated and all of that. But even at its peak, DeAndre Swift didn't look half the player with Shane Steichen gone in that offense. And I think Jonathan Taylor is 10, I won't say 10 times the player, but I think he's significantly better than DeAndre Swift. I think if you get a season where he is healthy with Shane Steichen, with read options, yeah, I could... If someone told me right now Jonathan Taylor would be pushing for the running back one overall next season, I wouldn't dispute it. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, an immensely talented player. Like I'm excited to see how that works next year with him and Anthony Richardson playing together, because that was the one thing that left me feeling cheated in 2023, that we didn't get to see any of those two play together.
Yeah, that was... Robert. And also he went to the same university that you did. So
that's right. Very true. Very true. And we've got another big running back coming out this year. Braylon Allen, who people are going to be, I think there's going to be a bit of a frenzy for him when he weighs in at the combine at around 240 pounds and probably runs something around a 4.5. I think people are going to get pretty excited about him. Yeah. He moves pretty well for a big guy.
Yeah. I love that. Let's look at, just quickly, because I know you got to go in a couple of minutes. I want to talk about the outliers, because I think this is the really interesting group that people won't really know what to do with. And it's Devon Achan, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Jaylen Warren, and Nick Chubb. What do we think about their prospects as a group or individuals going forward for next season and maybe beyond?
I don't think I'm going to be drafting any of J.K. Dobbins, Nick Chubb, or Gus Edwards. I mean, Gus Edwards is just kind of a role thing, and he has to be scoring touchdowns to provide fantasy value. And, you know, touchdowns are hard to predict, and I just don't like leaning into those guys who don't have the yardage behind it. And with Dobbins and Nick Chubb, I just don't want to fall into the trap of injury optimism. I mean, Chubb's injury was so devastating. Like, we're talking about the slow recovery for Javonte Williams, who, like, I don't think his injury was nearly as severe as Chubb's. And, the people who are drafting Chubb in the fourth or fifth round, I think that's wildly optimistic. And I think he probably starts the season on pop and automatically misses six games early on. And J.K. Dobbins has just shown a complete inability to stay healthy. So, I don't know that we should be expecting it to happen this time, but I'm pretty excited about Achan. I know he dealt with some injuries too, and I don't think we've really seen his usage stabilize. Like it sort of bounced around all over the place last season. But the good thing is he is so explosive that he doesn't need a lot of touches to pay off in a big way. Just get him 10 carries and 5 targets a game, and I think he's going to be a top 15 running back in terms of fantasy output, maybe better than that. I mean, he's just so fast and has such remarkable contact balance for a smaller back. I mean, it's just, I've seen so many times, both in his rookie year and at Texas A&M, where a tackler hit him and not only didn't take him down, but almost seemed to propel him faster in a different direction. Playing pinball and having the ball hit a bumper and go rocketing off in a different direction. Like that's kind of what it's like to watch Devon Achan run sometimes. So really excited about him. And Jaylen Warren, well, I mean, he's going to be getting the Arthur Smith experience, so I'm sure it's going to be a an unpredictable mix of Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. I'm not sure I'm going to want to invest in either with Arthur Smith calling the plays, but I think they're probably both going to provide some fantasy value just in unpredictable ways.
I think that's fair. Any final thoughts, Pat, before you have to leave us? And then on top of that, where can everybody find you, interact with you, and all the good work that you're doing over at Fantasy Pros?
Yeah, I think that's it. A pretty good recap of running backs. I think a little bit top heavy, maybe a clear top six or seven that we're excited about. You know, then things start to get a little murky, and I do think it's worth it for people to take some shots on some late rounders and some rookies. So, but yeah, we're doing a lot this week at Betting Pros for the Super Bowl, obviously. So I would check that out if you're, you know, interested in placing some wagers on Sunday. And, you know, we're going to be doing stuff at Fantasy Pros all season. I know people have their rookie drafts in dynasty leagues that they're going to get excited about. Best ball rooms are going to be open in full in just a few days after the Super Bowl. I know Underdog is already open. So we're going to have all that content at Fantasy Pros. Just keep visiting and looking for the fire hose of content that we're going to be delivering.
Yeah, I've got 5 IDP articles I'm writing this month for you.
Go nice. Outstanding.
Yeah, Mike came to me and said, you know, you wrote some good ones last year. Can you focus on IDP this month? I was like, yeah, do people read IDP content in February? But yeah, sure.
They do.
They do.
They do, Murph. Yes, they do.
Yeah, that's what I've been told. But no, really appreciate it, Pat. I know you got to run, and stocks and I wrap up here. So appreciate the time as always. Can't wait to get back into it when we're nearer the season. And thanks as always for appearing.
Murph Stocks, thanks for having me, guys. Always love joining my friends across the pond. You guys are wonderful, and enjoy the Super Bowl.
Thanks, matey. You too. All the best, cheers, my friend.
Pat. Cheers.
Bye.
That was special.
It was. I always enjoy having Pat on.
Love Pat. You missed the start. This is episode number 800, my friend.
Whoa. Is it really?
Yeah.
800. That's quite a landmark.
It is. I don't know how many pods get to 800.
It's a huge number, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. Imagine if someone had listened to every single one.
There must be someone.
I don't know. We'll see.
Actually, because you'd have to be an original OG, like listening when we were talking about our league.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if someone ever did go back and listen to all of those. But we didn't get your take on the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts? What are you doing for Super Bowl? Anything you're doing before we wrap this up?
So I couldn't book the day off because it falls on Poxy half term. Somebody had already booked the Monday off, and we've got a pretty strict one off, no one else off policy. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't book the Monday off. So I'm going to try and go to bed early, wake up, watch as much as I can until I fall asleep, and then go to work. That's my plan. I don't know how much I will catch, if I'm completely honest, but I'm going to have my phone on Do Not Disturb, and then I'm going to try and get through the day as much as I can without spoilers. I mean, it's practically impossible these days with how much I use my phone at work and stuff, but we will see. Something that did annoy me in going into this week that I've seen is the Niners put a social media post of hashtag against all odds. I don't know if you've seen this, Murph. Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah, so the Niners put a social media post up, and it was like dice and a few other things, and it said against all odds we've made it to the Super Bowl. And yet they have been bookies' favorites every week in the entire season, including this week. They're 2-point favorites over the Chiefs. It's like, I understand that it's hard work to get to the Super Bowl, but when you've been favorites every week, you haven't exactly been the underdog. And I thought that was a little bit irritating on their part. But I think whatever Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and their DC, whose name has just gone out of my head, and all I can think of is Stracciatella ice cream.
Steve Spagnuolo.
There you go. Although I quite like Stracciatella. Anyway, I think what they've done to get here with not the best team, I just feel as if you can't write. I just feel as if everybody's written them off against the 49ers team that is complete everywhere. And I just don't think you can write them off.
No.
Well, I mean, who do you think's going to win?
I think the Chiefs are going to win.
Yes, all aboard. Let's go.
I think the Chiefs are going to win. And I just simply think because I wrote them off against the Bills and then I wrote them off against the Ravens.
Although, does that mean on sort of reverse psychology, double bluff technology? That's a t-shirt.
This t-shirt has been made with double bluff technology.
That is a label. If we ever get to making our own labels, it's going to have double bluff technology on the label. Do you not think now you need to almost write them off, but no, they're going to win?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. I don't really do that. I think for all the reasons you said, I just think they're probably the better coach team. And I can't get the game 4 years ago out of my head where the 49ers were winning and then absolutely just fell apart. And I think it says something that the Chiefs have been here so regularly, you know, 4 and 5 years. And the only one, you know, they won two, lost one. The one that they lost had a whole array of circumstances that you can't legislate for. You're dealing with COVID. You're playing a team in their own stadium in the Super Bowl, which had never happened before. And then Andy Reid's son got into an accident and killed somebody on the week of the game. Like, all of those things, and then both like their senior offensive linemen went down. So there were a lot of things in that Super Bowl against Tampa. You know, I'm not taking anything away against Tampa. My point is, like, yes, they didn't perform in that Super Bowl, but there's a lot of reasons why that happened. And if you dissect it from the Chiefs' side, makes sense. All things being equal, the other two Super Bowls, they were superb. They coached brilliantly. They executed in big plays at big times. They controlled the key moments of the game down the stretch. And I just think that I will always go with the team who I think are the better coached. Because I think you know what you're going to get. Whereas the team of, and I don't want to say individuals because they're a team. You don't get this far without them being good. But they've got a wider degree of variance for me.
Mm.
They can be phenomenal. Like, if you sat there and said both teams will put their best effort on the field, I'd pick the 49ers. But I think the 49ers have a wider degree of variance. And I think we've seen that wider degree of variance this season. Whereas I think the Chiefs haven't been great, but have been coached so, so well. And I think they've come over more adversity. And I think they, you know, I just think that they're the team that are in the right position to win. And they've got the momentum. They've overcome some big, big wins. They've done it on the road. You know, they haven't had it easy. Didn't do the bye. You know, to knock off the Bills, you know, in Buffalo, in the cold, in the weather extreme, and then to knock off the Ravens, you're not getting harder runs than that.
No.
And that, but on the flip side, that could kill them. That could have been like, well, they've expended all that energy to get there, but I don't think so.
Yeah. I think for me, the fact, like you said, they've already been in a situation which gave us that great meme of Kelsey and Mahomes at halftime saying, right, they've got 27 points or whatever it is, let's go play some football and then come back and win in that situation. And then they've also got that win over the Niners in the Super Bowl where they came back. It wasn't as if they had a close win against the Niners. They've got that even bigger morale win on their part where they came back against the Niners and won.
Well, the other thing on this is I think the 49ers in the playoffs have been poor. They're a field goal away against the Packers from going overtime, maybe losing the game.
Yep.
the Lions completely capitulated, up 17.
Oh, if that's the Chiefs in that situation, Patrick Mahomes puts the sword to the head and is gone.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. And that's what I mean. The 49ers, you know, this against all odds, they've lucked it for me. I don't think they've been the best team on the NFC side over the last few weeks. I don't think they've been that good. I think if they play like that against the Chiefs, it's not going to happen for them. They have to go for a radical reset. And I think that, again, I'm looking at form. When you're coming into this, it's always there's a team carrying momentum. And for me, all the momentum is with Mahomes and the Chiefs. All of it is there. They've overcome big games. They've had to do some extraordinary things. And they've won in different ways. You know, they've had to be offensively very good, like against the Bills. And then when their offense absolutely were awful, and let's not take anything away, Mahomes and company couldn't move that ball for love nor money. Defensively, they completely annihilated the Ravens. Mm. And when you've got those different ways of winning, yeah, I can't go against the Chiefs. I mean, the only way I see the 49ers winning is if they absolutely all of them turn up and play their game. And if that happens, then they will win. I just can't see it.
Hmm. Yeah, I want the Chiefs to win because I want to be watching the NFL. Because obviously when Brady won his first couple, I wasn't really watching the NFL. Whereas now I watch the NFL and I want Mahomes to do... He's not going to do what Brady... Well, I can't say he's not going to, but we're in the midst of Mahomes having this dynasty and we get to see the start of it. And now we're in the potential middle of it. And it's... Yeah, I would rather see that than the Niners. Although the Niners... basically are the Broncos winning team when Shanahan's dad was in charge of the Broncos because their quarterback is now the quarterback's coach at the Niners. Christian McCaffrey's dad played wide receiver for the Broncos and he's now in a Super Bowl. I saw a cool picture of McCaffrey running around the Super Bowl picture when the Broncos won. There's a little boy in his dad's jersey and there's just glitter everywhere. And then there's another one as well, I think. Well, maybe the offensive coach is a coach somewhere else for the Broncos at the time.
John Lynch, the GM, he played for the Broncos.
He did. Ball number 47. That was my first jersey. No, it wasn't him. That wasn't the fourth one. There's like a coach or someone that was on the Broncos at the time and is now part of the Niners staff. But yeah, I just think the Chiefs are too good all around to not win.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Super duper. Anything else, Murph?
Don't think so. I think we've talked about the t-shirts. They'll be out soon at some point for the winners of leagues. I think that's it. I think it's the last time we'll pod without a game to look forward to in 8 months.
We'll have a whole season to look forward to, man, if not just a game.
Yeah. So, but I mean, without a game in the imminent. Like forward facing 7 months, but yeah. We'll see what happens. We're going to make the most of it. Ladies, enjoy your Super Bowl, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you doing anything good for it?
No, I'm sleeping and then I'm watching it in the morning at 4:30.
Oh, hi, puppy. That's early. I said that's early, it's not too far off when I normally get up, but hey. Well, like Murph said, everybody do enjoy your Super Bowls. I hope there's some parties to be enjoyed. And let's just hope it's a good game, because when it's not a good game, people get really antsy and we take some flack for some reason. And hey, we don't want that to happen. Rush Nation, until after the Super Bowl, as always, don't forget, keep rushing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.